of hell go ting-a-ling-a-ling for you, but not for me. Oh, death, where is thy sting-a-ling-a-ling, or grave thy victory? If you meet the undertaker, or the young man from the crew, have a pint with what's left over, now I'll say goodbye to you. For the bells of hell go ting-a-ling-a-ling for you, but not for me. Oh, death, where is thy sting-a-ling-a-ling, or grave thy victory?
Yes. Good morning, New York City, and welcome to Radio Free Aaron. All is right with the world today. We are hitting on all cylinders here at WBAI because I have in the studio the co-host, the great one, the one and only, Malachi McCourt. And at around 11:30, we're going to have in our producer, Corey Kilgannon from the New York Times, and he's going to be talking to us about his latest story about how the new technology is coming to the NYPD, and they will not be writing in their notebook. A lot of you would have seen the cops with the big leather notebook in their back pocket. And Corey had a very interesting story during the week telling about that, and it got a lot of play. It was all over the Twitter, and cops were commenting on it and everything like that. Well, on today's show at 12 o'clock, we're going to be covering a political earthquake that's going on in the 26 counties of Ireland. There was an election this weekend. The vote was yesterday. The count was today. I've been listening to RTE radio since 5 this morning, and Sinn Féin is doing unbelievable. In their wildest dreams, they could not believe what they're doing right now. And they keep saying, had they only run more candidates, but they don't have a crystal ball, they would have swept everything. They would have been the largest party with the largest amount of TDs. But right now, they are in the driver's seat in forming the next government. Even though Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil, who are both losing out, had made political statements that we will not go into coalition with Sinn Féin. Well, that is slowly changing hour by hour as Sinn Féin gets more and more TDs. And we're going to be speaking to between the 12 and 1 o'clock hour, maybe take some phone calls from our audience with Dr. Anthony McIntyre, former volunteer of the Irish Republican Army, did 18 years in Long Kesh, and he will be giving us his analysis. And we'll also be covering some politics in the six counties about there was a certain agreement that Gerry Adams and Martin McGuinness came to with the Blair government during when they signed the 1998 treaty that certain members of the IRA would get on the run letters. Well, that's being torn up, and the former RUC are going after the 33 letters that were handed out. So we're going to be talking about really the troubles are now a 30-year crime wave that happened, and they're going back on legacy, and they're going to be arresting former IRA men, not British soldiers that did anything to six counties, but former IRA men from 30 and 40 years ago, something that they did. So we'll be talking to Anthony about that, and we wanted to send out condolences to the Brawley family of Derry. Francie Brawley, who was a former member of Sinn Féin, he's with a new group, a political group that split away from Sinn Féin, Anton. Really, it's Catholic Sinn Féin. They were against abortion, but still Irish Republicans. Francie died, and he's famous within Republican circles because he wrote the song, the H-Block song, that I'll wear no convict's uniform, nor meekly serve my time, that England might grant 800 years of crime. So we're going to be playing the whole song at the 12 o'clock hour. And everybody in Ireland knows the song, even though it's never been on RTE, doesn't get played on the BBC, but it is known. It's almost like Sean South or Gary Owen, Malachi. Yeah. There's certain Republican songs that they're never played. They're banned from the radio. It's either official or unofficial. But songs like that, like today at one of the count centers, Sinn Féin came in singing Come Out You Black and Tans. And that's part of the reason they're winning, because of Fine Gael's idiotic idea of honoring the black and tans. So there was a rousing edition of the song in one of the count halls, and we'll be talking about that.
It was like when Ronald Reagan honored the SS and went to their graveyard.
Yeah. I mean, this is and now they're paying the price for it, Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil, because they were in coalition with Fine Gael. But we want to do a couple of announcements before we start talking about we are in fundraising mode. Now, as I see it, we have a minimum of thing to do in 2 hours. We are going to need five people to call in at 516-620-3602 and become a BAI buddy. Because if you do that, the money is guaranteed every month. You can do it for $10, $15, but we're going to need, at a minimum, listen, we want way more than that. Five is just too small. So throughout the show, we'll be making a pitch for you to become a BAI buddy, and then it relieves you with the other fundraisers coming up during the year that you don't have to contribute. You can if you want, but you'll know that, you know, whether you give or not to WBAI, that $15 a month, and BAI can actually make a budget knowing what's coming in and not hoping for the next fundraiser to say, oh my God, we're hoping to raise this much money. Yeah. They'll know exactly.
And it's tax deductible, John. Is that emphasized enough?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
So Trump does away with it, like he's doing away with other tax deductions
and all other free speech.
You know what, Mally? Before we get to the two announcements, when we were coming down from the Upper West Side, I had RTE on the radio in the car through my phone, which is unbelievable technology now. And you made the comment, if we were living in Ireland, RTE radio and television, you have to pay a tax.
They are national broadcasting companies financed by the government, ostensibly, but each individual person who has a television or a radio in the house has to pay an annual license fee.
But yet we were listening on the Upper West Side for free.
For free,
but then you were telling me the story. There's a member of your family who's a renegade, a highwayman, who had to leave the country due to them looking for their RTE money.
Well, the brother Frank, when we got, he got a job. So one of the first things he got, first luxury, was a battery-operated radio. And there were inspectors from the government. He used to go around listening and watch, looking for aerials. There were aerials that you had to put up at that time to
for the TV,
get reception for radio. So anyway, and the guys would spot you. They'd always look for the little wires that would snuck out the window and up to the roof and all that. But anyway, we were caught. Because, of course, we couldn't afford even electricity. So they spotted that we had the radio. So they gave Frank a summons. So he was supposed to appear in court. But in the meantime, he got his American passport because we were both born here in this borough of Brooklyn. And he got he got his passport and he came to America. So anyway, when the case was called up in court and then it was reported in the Limerick Leader, the defendant, Frank McCourt, charged with operating an unlicensed wireless, has been informed that McCourt has fled to America. So here he was. He was avoiding justice, and he never paid the license. So
he absconded.
So you think that this known criminal got a Pulitzer Prize. I don't know how that happened.
Last seen down in Cork boarding a ship heading to New York. Is that where you came out from? Was it out of Cork?
Well, Frank came out on he came on a cargo ship, actually, that had about 8 passengers. I came on the America because Frank sent me the money for that. It took 6 days, but he came on I'll think of this ship anyway. And they couldn't land in New York. They had to go all the way up to Albany. They wouldn't let him off.
Right.
Yeah.
Where did the ship sail from? My father, when he came over in the 40s.
You're right. It did sail from
Cork?
From Cork, from Cork.
My father sailed from Southampton because everybody in the north went to England and sailed out of Southampton.
I sailed from Cove. which was in County Cork, and therapy. So anyway, at that time, so anyway, even to this day, if you're in Ireland and you have a television or a radio, by law, you have to pay for it.
That's changing. You know why? Because nobody has a television or a radio anymore. They've all cut the cord, and they're watching it on their laptop and iPad. So now they're trying to rewrite the law that any electronic device, not just television and the wireless, that if you have a laptop and you have, like we did today, on the phone, listening to RTE, we're in violation of not paying that tax, our yearly tax to RTE. So you don't even have to own a TV now or a radio.
And so the RTE means Radio Telefis Éireann, which is the Gaelic for the thing. But it seems to me that it is that even though it's government owned and sponsored, and they also have commercial messages on there as well. And even with that, you still have to pay for a license. So when you have, here you are, WBAI, one out of 10 people that listen to our programs here do subscribe or donate, whatever you like. And it's... And in a sense, and it has to do with hesitancy about, I can't find my credit card now, or so on and so forth. But please, while we are on the air, we don't always get credit when you subscribe or donate. You have to mention that this is the program. What are we calling it, John?
Well, we're going to go with Radio Free Air. It's been for 40 years.
Okay, so let's call Radio Free Air. So would you please today become a WBAI buddy? That's it. And a buddy is, I don't know what the word comes from, but it means you're a friend, that you enjoy our program, that you appreciate the bit of humor we throw in, the conversation, the subjects, and just you could we try and on this program particularly, we will mention that there are things that you might consider bad news. But also we want to reassure you that we are also in the process of resolving problems with each other. There's so many of us, so many great right-thinking people. And the main thing, there has been an update in crime. And
an uptick in crime.
And they're blaming it on justice being done with people getting out of jail on bail.
Oh, with no bail, not
or
on
no
bail.
Bail. Yeah. Or without. Yeah. I mean, you can be bailed out maybe for a dollar or something, but it's perfectly. That's the way. Because when you look about, people are saying, "Oh, we should lock them up and throw away the key." Well, how about that? It only costs about $200 a day to keep a person in prison. And then people have to be hired to be guards in prisons. And it's not a very pleasant job. And some people have to work for a living. This is the only job they can think of doing. And they get bit. But there are also many, many people that are subjected to violent assaults, because 70% of people in prison have mental problems. So violence is nothing new to them. So so locking them up and throwing away the key, that's easily said. But people who say that are not the ones that are doing the job and have to be there watching this misery, having to watch out for their lives and their safety, their physical safety, as well as the mental thing of the and the uptick in crime has to do with nothing else but with poverty, one, and the example of our government. I mean, we have in our government right at this moment, it's the only government we've had in several hundred years of American independence where the cabinet meetings can be held in prison, because that's where so many of the of the future former fake Fox president, 4F president. That's where all his friends and appointees are. And they steal. They are blatant thieves. They take planes, private planes. They travel in luxury. They have Secret Service looking after them. And all of this stuff is stolen from the average. And somebody will steal, do a little shoplifting, and they throw them into prison and keep them in prison at a cost. Whatever they might steal might be worth $5, and it costs $200 to keep them in prison. What kind of bloody justice is that? So I think that we have a tax dodger, a draft dodger, an adulterer, a liar, a scoundrel, and a thief. And here he is getting away with treachery when he was getting foreign governments in to look at our to investigate our own situations and giving them access to. And of course we pay thousands of dollars for his golf carts, and he's on the phone. We have had 3.5 years we have been without a president. He has not been present. All he's been doing is watching television and being inundated with Fox News and tap, 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 and tweeting out a lot of old rubbish. And you will hear it here. Whereas the people who listen to him and to listen to Fox now are, statistically, they are illiterate. They are ignorant, they are ill-read, and a lot of good, decent, hopeful people, but they're uneducated. They are the supporters. Now, they're either uneducated or else they are conservatives. Now, all conservatives are greedy. They're frightened people. They're always afraid that some poor person is going to get something.
Don't take away my gun.
Take away my gun. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So it's what we need is, that's why they make education impossible. That's why people can't get college degrees, because they make sure that you overpay billions of dollars. It's the largest debt around for college degrees. And so they don't, that's what they depend on, people being ignorant and uneducated, and they want to maintain them. They're not necessarily stupid, but they're not getting opportunities. But they're racist, anti-Semitic, frightened and fearful people. So we need to have sympathy for them and try and educate them and do our best. And so here on this very program, if you would contribute or donate, how do we do that, John?
Well, the pledge number is going – you could do it online, but if we would like to get credit for anybody sending it. You can donate anything. Or what we're really pushing for is to get WBAI buddies. And the number here, or the number where the call center is 516-620-3602. Become a BAI buddy, and every month like $10 or $15 will be taken out, and then the BAI management can make a budget and pay bills. But if you can't do that and you want to make a donation of $100 or $25 or $50, call the same number. Because during this time frame between 11 and 1, you know, management will see that, look at the money that was brought in at 516-620-3602. I'll do it again. 516-620-3602. And leave any type of stuff, because this is our new time slot here, and it's very good. We got 2 hours on a Sunday. We can sit back. You can listen to Malachi rant about the crime wave that's down at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue and just get his insight. And just call that number. But, Malachi, just a couple of announcements, because now I have to refer to you as Professor Malachy McCourt, a man who left Ireland with no secondary education, no college, comes over here, and now you're teaching at a college. How did this come about?
Well, it's a remarkable, insight of Louis Frumkes at Hunter College. And due to the fact that I have dashed off about 10 books published, and one of them on the, a couple of them on the New York Times bestseller list, and the Irish Minister for Education awarded me an honorary grade school certificate because he was astonished that I got published. And how could you do that without a formal, I didn't ever went to high school. But I got this. So anyway, I wrote a memoir after my brother Frank wrote Angela's Ashes, and I hit the bestseller list as well. So there it was. So so I've been going to Hunter College do on panels there on writing memoirs. So I'm going to give a four-hour crash course in memoir writing on the 22nd of February. And that would be at from 1 to 2 p.m.
No, no, it's longer than that. I think it's
1 to 4 p.m. Yeah, 1 to 4 p.m. Oh, yeah. No, what, 5 p.m.
Holy Jesus.
And what you do is, if you want to register for that course, call 212-772-4067. And that would be, have you got your pen ready? Poise your pen, 212-772-4067. The Malachy McCourt Memoir Crash Course on the 22nd of February, which is 2 weeks off now. And then we will, and then it will say, there is no set way of writing a memoir. And a memoir is about memorandum. They're major events. It has nothing to do with facts or history. It has to do with what you are thinking. That's what a memoir is, and what you're feeling. And there's no limit to what you can do. The only thing is, don't be boring. For example, the most boring word in the English language is interesting. And if you have to say that, you're caught for language. So you don't have to say it's interesting. Try something else. So if you call, if you ring 212-772-4067 to take the Malachy McCourt memoir writing class on February 22nd from 1 to 5 p.m., we will have a lot of fun. It's 4 hours of fun.
And also, you can go to Malachy's Facebook site and get in contact with him there if you need more information. Just go to Facebook and type in Malachy McCourt. Malachy, one of your recommendations would be that if you're in grammar school, to quit and leave, because you really don't need what's coming afterwards, high school or anything. You did it. Would that be a recommendation to say, follow in my footsteps what I did,
yeah,
and just don't bother going to school?
Well,
go to the library, read like you did, and live an interesting life.
But that was the thing that saved my arse, John, was mm-hmm. the reading. That both Frank and myself and Alfie and Mike, we got a taste for reading because there was nothing else for us to do except talk and read. And the library came to Limerick, and the Carnegie Library. And that man Carnegie, we owe him a great deal. So we got to read, and we read everything, and a lot of English stuff. So we were very influenced by, we thought everything, the conqueror always wants you to think that they are superior to you. So we thought that everything English was just great. And we thought that, like a lot of Americans, you know, they're so impressed with the crown and the British accent, and people emulate that. So we thought everything was British was great. But then we found out, of course, that they were just a bunch of conservative crooks. And they were 800. And the reason why the Irish, Ireland was occupied for 800 years, because every single Irish insurrection, rebellion, revolt was betrayed by the Irish. And all the principles of democracy, just like they've been betrayed now by the crowd of Irish Americans around Trump. But anyway, I always go wandering off.
Oh, yeah. I'm just waiting here where you're going to land.
Yeah.
But where you have to land is at 516-620-3602 and become a buddy. Now, I have a couple of announcements, too. My play about driving a yellow cab for the last 40 years off the meter, where I had a three-month run at the Irish Repertory Theater. Now, I've done it downstairs here for a BAI fundraiser. I've done it at the Cell for a BAI fundraiser and the Fringe Festival and that. So I have never done it in Queens, where I'm born and reared, where I started driving. And I'm finally getting to do the show in Queens on Saturday, April 18th at 7 p.m. and Sunday, April 19th at 3 p.m. at the New York Irish Center in Long Island City, just off Vernon Boulevard and Jackson. There's a huge Irish New York Center right there. And if you want to get tickets, go to my website, offthemeter.net. Just type that in. You'll see a link to get to the New York Irish Center. And then I'm taking the play over to Ireland, where I'm going to be doing it in my old, dear old Donegal at the Abbey Arts Center in Ballyshannon in County Donegal, and that is going to be on Saturday, May 9th. And then I'm heading, I'm taking the Rocky Road to Dublin on May 15th and 16th, Friday and a Saturday, Friday at 7 p.m. and a Saturday at 3 p.m. And we're going to see how it goes down over there, doing three shows. If it goes well, I'm going to go back. I have interest from a lot of the regional theaters throughout Mayo and Leitrim and Roscommon and Galway and things like that. So we'll see if they get it over there. They might not. I get up there and they go, what is that all about? But, it went well
also
here.
Also in the works, John, we're negotiating because I'm going back, I think it is in November. And we're in negotiating for the play.
To Limerick.
To Limerick, in October, I think it is. So anyway, we'll let you know about that.
Well, we'll see how the reviews go when I'm over there. You know, it should go well because there's an Irish thread that runs through it with Stephen Fry, the most famous British actor.
Yeah.
Over there. I took him to my neighborhood, Middle Village, Queens, and brought him to a mob club, which he filmed, and he won a BAFTA award. And then I'll talk about Richard Hammond, who was a host of Top Gear, who is internationally famous because of the movie. And I taught him for 2 days how to drive a yellow cab. So, I can run that theme through it. And then I'm going to talk about being on The Daily Show with Trevor Noah. So I've added a couple
and
of more.
CBS.
CBS Sunday morning. I probably won't do. But I'm going to have as the backdrop the painting that CBS Sunday morning talked about.
Yeah. Mary White.
She did a portrait of a veteran in every state in the Union, and I represent New York.
50 veterans and John.
I feel like veteran. Forrest Gump or Zelig. I happen to be the guy for New York that she did. So I'm getting a huge cloth banner of the painting to have it as a backdrop of the city of New York. And if you see the painting, people at the gallery in Charleston, South Carolina says, I can hear the noise of New York City in that painting.
That's so right.
That's what I want to project on the stage.
It just jumps out at you from that portrait.
Yeah, it does.
Really
so if
great.
You want to see Off the Meter in Queens, everyone here in the city always tell me, when are you doing it here again? When are you doing it? Well, I'm doing it in April 18th and 19th. Go to offthemeter.net. Now, Malachi, when I first started with you, Mario Murillo said, listen, I want to give you 2 hours on Wednesday, do something with city politics. So I called you, which I thought you would never accept because you flew solo your whole radio career.
Yeah,
you did not have a sidekick. You didn't have any. And I know why. You don't need anybody. Like, I do need a sidekick to, I gotta take a break.
No, you don't. You've been here for 40 years.
No,
John.
I know that, but I've always had sidekicks. So then I said, I wanted to bring Malachi McCord on, and then I had met Corey Kilgannon from the New York Times. He was doing character studies. And I said, I'm gonna bring Corey on, and we had a wonderful 6 years. And we're now back together again here on Sunday between 11 and 1 every Sunday. And we still have Corey as a producer. He gets us certain New York Times writers if there's a story that fits in with what we're doing. And we cover Corey stories. Corey had a story this week about how the NYPD are now coming into the 21st century. And the old book, like, if you have ever seen a cop, particularly in the subways, you see, you don't much see it on the streets. You'll see a cop in the subway, and he has the big leather booklet in his back pocket.
Right, yeah.
And you'll see him pull it out every once in a while and write. And you really never think much about it, but that's a very important item he has, because that could end up in court. And what was he doing during that time frame? And Corey, thanks for coming on and bringing the three musketeers back together here, the three amigos on WBAI. But I think you got a great reaction to it, because I looked on Twitter and it was being tweeted all over about this thing about new technology arriving to the NYPD and doing away with the book. I talked to my sister, who's retired NYPD. She has all her books. They get to keep the books.
Yeah.
And the only way the DA gets it, he has to subpoena them and then go through it to find out what went on, whatever crime was happening. But, Corey, how did you get on to this story? Because everybody's asking me, what kind of hooks does Corey have that he knew about this story?
Thanks, John. Yeah, thanks for having me on. Hello, Maliki.
Hello
Sunday
there,
morning, guys.
Corey.
Yeah, great. Thanks for talking about this, John, and great questions. Basically, the story came, you know, the NYPD had mentioned to me about the retirement of these handwritten memo books, and it definitely helped me get some access to, cops who were just kind of finally saying goodbye to them and that type of thing. So basically, it came through the department, and we get pitched stories all the time, this is kind of through almost like the press or PR wing of the department. And a lot of times you look at the stories they're pitching and they're very, either they're one-sided or they're very gratuitous, for the people, whoever's pitching them. But this one seemed to have like real substance. I mean, because these memo books go back more than a century. In fact, they go back to before the NYPD was formed in 1845. Before that, you had constables and you had night watch in New York that were law enforcement and used it, So then basically the deal was that these memo books, which, you do see them in the cop shows and the movies, just the facts, and flip open the book and they'll take their notes. But that's all going by the wayside because, as we know, like handwriting and pen and paper, I mean, that's like kind of, that's going the way of like blacksmith and,
Corey, what's the origin of the name cop?
Well, Maliki, I think isn't it come from the copper badges?
I thought that was it, but I was wondering if that was correct.
Not sure about that. Yeah.
And also, at one period, we had two police forces here competing in the city at one time.
There was also kind of a Pinkerton type advertised force in the late 1800s. I could be wrong.
I'm not the most. I know there was a municipal police force and there was city police force, and they were at each other. They were at war.
So was the fire department going at each other too?
Oh yeah,
trying to fight each other to put out fires. Different departments.
So the memorandum book, Corey. There's a. They turn out 10,000. What is it? They print up 10. They've been printing up 10,000 of them every.
Right. They print their. Police headquarters is at One Blue Plaza. It's down right opposite Town Hall. It's near the entry to the Brooklyn Bridge in downtown Manhattan. And it's a big building. And all the predictable things are there. The commissioner works out of there, and all the high commands. But one thing that's also there on the ground floor is a printing department. They print their own flyers and wanted posters. And you think of that goes, I mean, you'd think maybe that stuff was outsourced, but they print it right there in police headquarters. And one of the things they print are these memo books, 10,000 a month. So that's how important they were, and that's how much of an official policing tool it was. They print out and issue them to officers every time they finish this book. Passed about a few months, they fill it up and then they get a new one. And they do what the ones were. They didn't turn them into the department. They put them in their lockers. So the memo books were very much in the possession of the police officers themselves, and they remained in their possession, even though they were taking down very official information, 911 calls, any observations that they'd make during their tours, during their shifts, even down to like what car they used, the odometer reading, how much gas was in the car, what time they took their lunch. I mean, every little thing that they did was recorded in these books. So it was very much a chronicle of the day-to-day life of a cop on patrol.
And there was also a bit of romance there, too. You had one officer noted that he met his wife-to-be and met a note.
Yeah, right. Yeah, one, you know, now he's not retired, but back in, I guess, the late 80s, he was on patrol in Far Rockaway, and he met a woman who he liked, and they met, and he knew, he kind of had a sense of, he really liked this woman, and he didn't want to lose her number, you know, put it on a scrap of paper, so he wrote it in his memo book, and because he wasn't going to lose that. I mean, these guys, if they're disciplined if they lose these books, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, he knew he was going to keep the book around, and so he, you know, he wound up marrying the woman, and they're still married 30 years, and he still has the book, and it means a lot to him. And, I mean, that's a good example of how these books, the cops, when they retire, they're expected to keep the books, you know. They can't toss them because, you know, down the line.
A lot of confidential stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that you can't share them either is another thing. And you know, if they, you know, the books are, you can, so the department and prosecutors and defense attorneys can subpoena these books for civil and criminal trials and departmental hearings. So the books are very much legal documents, in addition to being just like reminiscences and like kind of nostalgia keepsakes for these cops who want to remember what it was like on their job. It's like a diary of their professional life.
Well, how about leaving spaces there for second thoughts, Corey?
Frank Serpico gave you all the information on that.
I'll get to Serpico in a second. you know, you call that guy, you're always going to get a little side story. But, I mean, the back of the, you know, perspectives are right on the front of each page as you flip it over. The back of each page is left blank. It's called the fly sheet. And that's traditionally for, like, if you go to a car accident or even a crime scene, the cop is allowed to write, like, diagram what happened in the back of the page.
Oh,
or if
yeah.
they have any random thoughts or, you know, on things that aren't official, you know, less official, they'll write it on the back. And so it's called the fly sheet. So that's, but I think you're also referring to the fact that I call, you know, I keep in touch with Serpico, and I've written him up several times. And I you know, I called a bunch of retired police officers for this and detectives. And he said that, you know, back in the bad old days of, like, real, like, on-the-take corruption in the 60s when he worked, that, you know, some officers would leave blank either pages or blank space in the book so they could go back and kind of retroactively fill in stuff as needed. In other words, if they needed a warrant on somebody, they could go back to, I don't know, last week or whatever, say, yeah, the guy was observed doing this and that, and this is why we want the warrant on him, Judge. And so, you know, it left, you know, the idea being that, you know, you could kind of get creative with the books, you know.
So what about the, first of all, many, some folks, English is not their first language. And the other is, how about handwriting?
Handwriting is a big thing.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things that I will get to. They're moving to a digital app where they type it in on their phones, all these entries. So, I mean, there's no handwriting involved there. I mean, there may be, like, mistyping there. But, yeah, the handwriting. And I went to John Jay College. They have a police archive there, and you know, I was privy to, like, memo books from, you know, the 1890s and on up through the 20th century, and it's interesting, the calligraphy in these books. You know, they were using dip pens at that point, you know. You know, and they were and this was like, you know, this is like John Hancock's signature level of of writing. You know, I did encounter a streetwalker, you know, and and it was real kind of Gangs of New York lore type of stuff we'd read in these books. It was fascinating, really, the stuff that the beat cop encountered back in those days, you know? and they wrote it up in this kind of flowery script that we don't see anymore. So, like, yeah, these days it would be more like they have to sit, the department or whoever was accessing the books would have to sift through all different types of police officer handwriting, you know.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
So now we're going to the electronic or technical age where things will have to be thumbed or fingered. People who can't type, well, how about that?
Well, you know, most young people, like, you know, we don't, their whole life is they're typing things into their phone with their thumbs. You know, this is how they you know, handwriting doesn't really come into play that much anymore. And what they're now, the department is transitioning to, or they've just about finished the transition to an app on their phone. Each cop gets an iPhone in the NYPD, which is pretty unusual nationwide. I think San Francisco does it, but other than that, I couldn't find a big department that issues every cop their own department cell phone, iPhone. And it's really helped with streamlining, like eliminating a lot of the paperwork, and, you know, they can actually fill out accident reports and incident reports on their phones. And they can also access, you know, if they do a traffic stop, instead of running a license plate or running a license, driver's license, which could take, you know, 20 minutes or a half hour. You know, if you've ever been pulled over, you're sitting there with that cop behind you running your license, and it can take a long time. It's because they're radioing it into dispatch, and it can take a long time to get back from the dispatcher. Yeah, we checked out this person. They have a warrant, or they don't, or whatever. Now the cop can go on their phone, and through the police portal, they can check out, you know, they can do searches on people.
In a minute or two. And how about, are these phones capable of taking dictation rather than thumbing or fingering or whatever the hell they do?
I think, I'm not sure, but I think that, you know, most entries on the iPhone, there's a voice activated type of thing where you can speak it into the phone. Yeah.
Otherwise, it would take a week or two.
The bigger concept is that the memo book stayed with the officer for their career and after their career, you know, through their retirement. I mean, in fact, there were so many incidents of, you know, cops taking the books home and putting them in the basement, and then Sandy, Superstorm Sandy, you know, wiping them out. You know, so they, you know, they really do keep them with them going forward even after they retire. Now the information goes into the department databases and doesn't stay with the cops.
And what about where do the ones that you inspected that were at John Jay, where do they come from?
They were donated to John Jay by different police officers over the years. We spoke to, you mentioned the guy who met his wife and put her number in his memo book. I mean, that's a very, you know, kind of a romantic example. But then there's also, you know, heavier situations where, like, we spoke to an officer who was, you know, probably the first officer to respond to the terrorist attacks.
Yeah,
in the World
oh, yes,
Center,
yeah.
9/11.
Yeah.
And he, you know, there were two things that he saved in his experience there. And he almost died. He came just a few feet from the collapse of the first tower to collapse. But he saved, and his shirt was basically ripped off his body nearly, but he saved his badge, his shield, and he saved his memo book. And when he went back to his first precinct in Tribeca where he works, he sat down and he wrote, you know, something like responded to, emergency at World Trade Center. It didn't go into the enormity of the moment, but it was just very, you know, police jargon. You know, it was just handled like another job, you know, but he keeps the book, you know, close at hand still. He's still working there. And, you know, it reminds him of that day where everything started. You could see in the book where it was just another Tuesday morning in September, everything started out normal, and he records the basic stuff, you know, what kind of police car he's taking and what time he's going to have lunch. And his first job or police response of the day was with a traffic accident. And he was administering the traffic accident when he heard a big boom, and he looked up, and it was the first plane to hit the World Trade Center down the block. And, you know, you can kind of see how one day went, like, wildly off the rails. You know.
How the contents of these books, Corey, if they were to do, I mean, putting girl's phone number in there would have nothing to do with his official position.
Right, well, that would have been on the fly sheet. In other words, it would have been a note, and it probably wasn't the most official of entries. But
and nobody was going to question. Yeah. But doing, how about confidentiality of court cases and so forth, if they're in these books? How can you talk about, are they allowed to talk about what they've entered?
Right. Well, that was one of the main roles of these books, is that they become a legal document and when the case goes to trial, or in other words, if the police officer recorded details of an arrest and that arrest turned into a case that the prosecutor was then going to pursue, typically the prosecutor would have the officer to the office, bring the book, and then make Xerox copies of whatever pages it was where the details of the arrest, you know, were recorded. And then if the officer was then summoned to be a witness in the trial, the officers are expected to bring that book with them to, you know, to remind them of, you know, sometimes these things are a year further down the road, and they would get on the stand, and if they had to refresh their memories, they would consult the book.
And when it finally, let's say if it does, as you said, it is legal evidence, if defendants or the accused people, do they have access to that book as well?
Yes, the defense lawyer can also get access to the book, yeah, through discovery.
Yeah, Corey, one of the other, I've talked to a couple of cops now about this new technology, and there's a term used particularly with the night shift. It's not with the day shift, called cooping. And I know a couple of guys got caught underneath the FDR bridge where they try to tuck the car away and go to sleep in the car and then write in the memo book, you know, at 1 o'clock, we got breakfast, or 2 o'clock in the morning, we were on 23rd Street, when they were actually sleeping in the car, and no one would ever question that because you didn't know. Now, with the phones and the geo fencing and the looking exactly where the phone is, they can see if you didn't move for your 8 hours that you were sleeping there, cooping, and I'm sure Al from the South Bronx knows what I'm talking about, is that that's going to do away with that. If they think you're up to shenanigans on the police department, that you went up into a building or to an apartment of someone you knew and went to bed and just kept your radio on, that if anything came up, you could go running out. But that is going to be a big problem for guys that like to sleep on the night shift.
Right. I mean, it's funny you mentioned that. I mean, cooping was a whole culture, you know, when you could just get, you know, with these memo books, you know, basically a sergeant or a supervisor would come by once or twice in your whole tour, in your whole 8-hour tour, and they'd sign the book saying, yeah, he was or she were at their prescribed posts or, you know, patrol areas, sectors, you know. And then, you know, of course, like you said, I mean, there's nothing to stop the officer from then, you know, taking a nap somewhere or whatever. But now, you're right. I mean, we're all tracked by our phones in some sense, and by our Easy Pass and by other things, electronics in our lives. And the police officers are no exception. And in the article, I included, you know, mention from the police officers union, the PBA, saying that, you know, they feared that there was a concern that this might just add to another more surveillance of police officers, and that, you know, every entry into these, every time you entered something in your memo book, which previously would be writing down something in your own book that wouldn't be tracked, now you're entering it into your phone. It's tracking, you know, where you made the entry and what time you made the entry. So it holds officers more accountable. And they say, well, you know, our officers are the best in the world. We don't need to babysit them. And that was one of the concerns. And the police department's, you know, rebuttal is that this is not for babysitting the officers or monitoring the officers. This is just for, you know, streamlining the data that we do keep. And just, you know, if you're a good cop, you want the department to know where you are. And they can keep better track of the officers that they have mobilized in the field if they know where they are via these digitized memo books.
You know what, Corey? I've taught any of the cops I know now, everybody's freaking retired. And they don't like it. They all love it because it's, you know, they don't like change. Did you talk to any of the newer guys coming on, or it meant nothing to them? They grew up on Facebook, Twitter, and using their thumbs to type in stuff. And maybe it's not a big deal to them. But to older guys and my sister, they like the old way of doing things.
Right. Yeah. I mean, the newer people are, I mean, they're right there typing into their phones every minute. I mean, you could think it's, you know, I don't know about you. I have a 19-year-old daughter. Right? We can hold a whole conversation. She could be typing into her phone while we're talking, you know?
Right.
So it's nothing, you know, but there was concern among the older officers that I spoke to, saying that, especially if, you know, they come upon an emergency situation where they have to grab a witness or two, and what's your name, and you know, and grab somebody, it's good. They're going to have a hard time taking the information down, like, you know, thumbing the information into their phones, and they're more comfortable with the pen and paper. But apparently the younger officers are actually more comfortable, you know, entering stuff into their phones, you know, with their,
you know, you know what, Corey, I'm just thinking, because you're talking about your daughter and my daughters and everything. Now they don't even communicate in English. It's emojis that they send you. I mean, what the frig is this? Any of this smiley that this one's looking sad. I mean, surely, God, there must be regulations that you cannot be typing in with emojis, you know, made an arrest, ha-ha, or, oh, very sad, just picked up someone, or that. I mean, they can't be doing that.
Well, that would actually be I'd be interested to see if they develop their own emojis. You know?
Yeah, their own way. Yeah, their own emojis. Right, like? Right.
That's it.
You're onto something there, John.
Visual evidence.
Yeah, yeah. There'll be a whole new cop speak of using emojis.
I mean, yeah, you got the handcuff emoji, you know.
Yeah. How about the 10,000 month, is it, Corey?
Yeah. Yeah.
So they print 10,000 a month. There's 36,000 cops. Does the commissioner have one of those?
The commissioner is not. I think it's below the rank of captain who has to fill out the memo books. Yeah. And if you have an office post, I think you don't have to do it. But like 36,000, that's the most of the rank and file.
When the cops are assembled at the station house and they're getting the instructions of the day from the captain or the lieutenant who's in charge for what that day, you see them out with the books. Are they noting down what the instructions they'll be given, what to watch for, what's happening, and so on? Or what's going on?
There's usually a sergeant or a supervisor telling them, assigning them to which sector, which sliver of the neighborhood that they're going to be patrolling, telling them the color of the day, telling them what time they're going to take their meal or their lunch, what actually car they're going to be taking and that type of thing. So they're just taking down the basic marching orders at that point. Yeah.
So that was an integral part of an officer's equipment before he went or she went on duty. There was also the famous nightstick, which reverberated when you hit the sidewalk.
Or your head. What do you mean the sidewalk?
Well, no, you could hear a bang, bang, bang. Yeah. Designed that way? Do you know, Corey?
I don't know, but that was definitely a feature of the. You know, you remember if people will be sleeping in the subway, they'd bang the seat, and served that purpose. But, the nightstick is also almost like, kind of obsolete now. Now they carry these expandable batons.
Yeah.
It's more like a blackjack in a certain way. But they actually do get issued nightsticks, but they're not made of wood. They're made of, like, some kind of polycarbonate material. And they're usually kept in the trunk. Like, you wouldn't really see an officer with a nightstick, swinging from their hip anymore. But police didn't start carrying guns until I think it was 1895. Yeah. So the memo book, I think it might be the oldest policing tool that there is. I don't even think handcuffs, like before the 1850s, were they walking around with handcuffs? I don't think they were,
Handcuffs. So I know that at one time in New York, that in the African-American communities, cops were known, police were known as Hallorans.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because so many of them were Irish.
Right.
So they used the name Halloran. So this memorandum book now is, they will have a tiny, so instead of putting that in your cargo pants, you'll now just have a little phone. Is that the way it's going to be?
Yes, it goes right into the phone, and that information goes right to the department. It doesn't really stay with the officer. Although the officer can go. A couple of real advantages. The officer can go and check information that they entered yesterday or last year or 5 years ago, and they really couldn't do that before. They kept to go through their lockers and find which notebook. You can imagine how difficult it would be to go back and search. If you want to just, you reference an entry that you made in the past, if it wasn't, in the past month or something in your book, to go to previous notebooks, it might be difficult to figure which one it is, especially if you have the organizational skills that I have. To go back a few years and say, oh, now where did I see this person before or whatever it was, to try to find that might be difficult. But, that now they can search by date or by keyword their entry. So it really does, the digitization does have its advantages as far as, searchability and referencing this stuff going back. You can basically Google your own entries, essentially.
So our guest, our colleague, our founder, our co-founder of the of this get-together is Corey Kilgannon, New York Times, an amazingly terrific, incisive writer, a master of the English language, and he has a good sense of humor. And he often brings good news as well as everything else. So
Malachy, I did want to mention that I don't know if you saw it today, that two police members of the department were shot in separate incidents, apparently by the same gunman last night and this morning in the Bronx. So it was, that's really
yes,
kind of shocking. You know, there was a kind of a
there was a cop. He's wounded on the chin and neck, and then. But I gather Connor, my son, who was retired from the PD, he said that it was somebody else. They've arrested a woman for the second shooting.
I think they've arrested a man, and they've also, you know, there was a shooting in the Bronx this morning.
Where yes,
the same. They think it's the same person.
Same guy, because he got away last night.
Shot someone who shot an officer in a police van.
Yeah,
and then got away. And then this morning, apparently, the same person went into a precinct nearby in the Bronx. Oof. And just, you know, shot a lieutenant and then didn't make it out of the precinct.
I mean, he got shot in the arm.
He got arrested.
He's not been killed, though. He was shot in the
arm. No, he dove on the ground. Apparently, from videos that are on social media, he dove on the ground in the precinct, and they just grabbed him at that point. But it's there's so much going on now with the NYPD because, you know, there's bail reform in New York, and that's a controversial issue about not holding people who were arrested
on bail, offenses and so forth.
Right, and some people in law enforcement say that that's, you know, going too easy on people. There are some people that just have to hold, and you can't let them go. They're going to be a danger to, you know, the public.
Well, one of the things that the famous cuckoo NRA says that we should all be armed. And here we have two police officers fully armed, and they were not able to defend themselves against this, against other people having illegal guns, legal or illegal. Guns are the craziest bloody thing to have in our society. Most every country in the world where the police are unarmed, they have far less crime. But anyway, that's another matter.
Yeah.
Well, Corey, thanks for coming on. And just type in Corey and notebook or whatever. I mean, it's all over the place. It's good. Did you get good reaction to it? Because, Corey, I know you write a lot of stories, but then there's certain stories that just people just love. And this seems to be one of them.
Yeah. I mean, I got my share of, especially on social media. You see how many people are talking about it and retweeting it and that type of thing. And, you know what we run up against now, John, is that, you know, during the impeachment, process and that news cycle and coronavirus is that you write these stories from New York. And, you know, if you have a lot of global and national news going on, like it affects how many people wind up reading your New York story, you know, because it's always been, you know, kind of a factor in news is how many, you know, it goes even in the term slow news day and what's going on. So sometimes when these stories come out and there's nothing else really going on, people share it and people pass it around and they read it and, you know, there's not a hell of a lot to read. And sometimes there's loads of stuff going on and it's a blip on people's news feeds or whatever. So
it's like that soldier in Thailand that he went out and killed, 50 people and wounded another 60 or something.
Yeah.
And he just, in a mall or somewhere, he just kept shooting and he said his finger got tired and then they killed him. And so there's something in Thailand, mass killing. So we are getting, you know, there's what would be a blip in our news, but it just shows these mass killings. I don't know what the hell is going on with that stuff. But it is the availability of guns. And the less we have of those damn things, the less, the better off we will be. But that's another matter again.
Yeah.
Well, Corey, thanks for coming on. You're listening to WBAI, and we're in the midst of a fundraising drive.
Yeah.
And if you like to hear stories like that, and this is not secondhand information, this is Corey, you know, co-producer here, writing for the New York Times with a story about how the new technology is coming and to the NYPD. And now if you want to hear stories like that, and then our next hour is going to deal just directly with the election that is now the vote count going on in Ireland, where Sinn Féin is just sweeping the polls over there. The only thing stopping them from really taking the government or getting into the government is that they didn't run enough candidates. And we're going to be talking to Anthony McIntyre in a little while. But we'd like to do a little pitching before we go to that, to become a WBAI buddy and support this show from 11 to 1 o'clock every Sunday. You either can make a donation or become a BAI buddy where money's taken out of your credit card every month, $10 or $15 at 516-620-3600. 3602. The number here at 516-620-3602. And, you know, you get to hear Malachi every Sunday spinning yarns and talking about how his brother had to leave the country because he didn't pay for his RTE license. You know what? I almost wish there was a BAI license where we sent people out from the station to hunt down listeners that didn't pay. And we listened to their door. Ha ha! Yeah. They're listening to BAI. Get money off them for the BAI buddy. But
aerial,
we don't do that.
Aerial on the roof.
Yes.
Are there such things as aerials anymore?
No, I don't think so. Everything is listening on the computer and the phone. And I remember David Rothenberg said he went to Radio Shack and they didn't have radios. So, I mean, it's just now the phone and laptop and iPad and computer.
When you call me, John, at home and I'm in the kitchen and I keep on forgetting and I pick up the phone and I try to talk to you. And after about 33 seconds, I'm fading away. Then I have to rouse myself off my chair, get my walker, and then proceed to another room so as we can continue the conversation.
And listen, I'm amazed by your apartment because it takes about 10 minutes for you to go through all the bathrooms, living rooms, dining rooms, sitting rooms, and closets. And then you go, is that good? No, keep moving. How far can this guy go? I'm out in the hall. All right, I'm starting to hear you now.
Buckingham Palace is nothing to me, John.
It's 12 o'clock here in New York City. Please donate 516-620-3602. There's a political earthquake. We're not hearing it here in New York yet, but I guarantee we will. Sinn Féin will be over here in droves very shortly after the turnout and the election today in the 26 counties. We want to go to Anthony McIntyre, but if you can make a couple of calls, become a BAI buddy at 516-620-3602. Because the song that we're going to play is called the H Block Song.
It's a great time to call now.
Yeah, written by Francie Brawley, who just died during the week, a famous Irish Republican from Derry. And this song, you will never hear it on RTE or BBC, but you will hear BAI. We've played it since the song first came out in the 70s and 80s. And every Republican in Ireland knows the song, just like they know Come Out Your Black and Tans. They know that song, even though they didn't learn from it on radio. They learned from it in the local bars, at traditional sessions. So we're going to play this song, the H Block song. When we come out of it, we're going to speak to Anthony McIntyre and get the latest update on politics in the North. Which is
of Ireland,
north of Ireland, and in the south, where the election and the vote count is ongoing.
And that's John McDonough, and I'm Malachy McCourt, and this is still WBAI 99.5 on your radio. And we are begging, actually. We're mendicants, and we have to ask you to please become a WBAI buddy. At whatever sum you choose to pay each month, $10, $15, $20, or whatever dollars. But generally speaking, make it at least 10. Now we need, if you're going to keep hearing us on this, otherwise the management has no choice but to preempt us, and then you will hear other stuff. But if you like our program, would five of you, just five, at $10, that's for this hour. And then we need five more on the next hour. So off we go with the music. And please ring that number.
And 516-620-3602. 516-620-3602.
Well done, John.
I am a proud young Irishman in Ulster's hills. My life began a happy boy through green fields ran and kept God's and man's laws. But when my age was barely 10,
my country's wrongs were told again by tens of thousands marching men, and my heart stirred to the cause. So I'll wear no convict uniform, nor meekly serve my time. That Britain might brand Ireland's fight, be it 100 years of crime. I learned of centuries of strife, of cruel laws, injustice rife. I saw now in my own young life the fruits of foreign sway. Protesters threatened, tortured, maimed, division nurtured, passions flamed, outrage provoked, rights cause defamed. This is the conqueror's way. I'll wear no convict uniform, nor meekly serve my time. That Britain might brand Ireland's fight, be it 100 years of crime. Descendant of proud Connacht clan, Concannon serves cruel Britain's plan. Man's inhumanity to man has spawned a trusty slave. No strangers are these bolts and locks, no new design these dark heat blocks. Black Cromwell lives while Mason stops, the bully taunts the brave. But I'll wear no convict uniform, nor meekly serve my time. That Britain might brand Ireland's fight, be it 100 years of crime. Does Britain need 1,000 years of protest, riot, death and tears? Or will this past decade of fears, of 80 decades, spell an end to Ireland's agony, new hope for human dignity? And will the last obscenity be this grim hate block cell? But I'll wear no convict uniform, nor meekly serve my time. That Britain might brand Ireland's fight, it 100 years of crime.
And welcome back to Radio Free Erin, and that is Francie Brawley, who passed away during the week in Derry. singing probably his most famous song, the H Block song. The first time I got to meet Francie Brolly was up at Gaelic Park. Now, one of the founders of Radio Free Erin in the early 80s was Barbara Droupe. She was of French extraction, but she studied Irish history, and she was involved with the show. But she was a first-wave feminist. She had a crew cut. She wore Doc Martens and camouflage pants. So we go up to Gaelic Park, which is old-fashioned, old-time Irish guys with their suits and ties. Francie Brolly, first time, I think, coming up to Gaelic Park in the Bronx, and we're walking around. She walks right up to him. What's about the men behind the wire? What about the women behind the wire? Why are you leaving women out of your song? Well, I'm like, oh my God, this guy just landed and you're torturing him already. And that was the first time I met Francie Brolly. But that song can be heard on the airwaves here, but you will never hear it on RTE or BBC. And we have with us on the line, before we get into the political earthquake, Dr. Anthony McIntyre. Anthony, you were in the H Blocks that Francie Brolly is singing about. Did you guys in the cell blocks, did you know about the song? And can you explain, how is it that Republicans know about the song, but you'll never hear it on radio?
Well, I don't remember the song from the H Blocks at all, John. I have a very clear memory of what we regard as the H Blocks song, even though I believe Francie had written his song about 1976. There was a song made up by the Blanket Men themselves, the Blanket Men of Hates Black 5, and that was what we had known as the Hates Black song. And our wing OC, Mickey Fitzsimmons from Lennadown, always sang that Hates Black song. Now, not Francie's one, but the one that the Blanket Men had composed. And it was very, very popular in the wings. I was actually out. I think my first memory, I could be wrong, but my first memory, I believe, of hearing Francie's song was when I'd heard it about the clubs in West Belfast after release. I have no memory of it from the prison.
Right. And did you get information like that of the songs, particularly with Christy Moore? I remember when I interviewed him one time and he went in and visited Bobby Sands and he said, you know, what can I do for you? And he said, you know, sing songs. And he sang and he got the words for Back Home in Derry and sang that. But that did get popular on the radio and you could hear it here and there. But a lot of the Republican songs that most Republicans know, particularly Come Out You Black and Tans, which was sang today by Sinn Féin at some of the counting halls, you don't hear it on radio or TV, but everyone knows the words to it.
Well, they're regarded as folk songs, rabble songs, many ways. RTE has always had a, and particularly influenced by the Workers' Party from the 70s and 80s, the RTE have a policy of trying to sideline Republican culture. And Come Out You Black and Tans has only been popularized as a result of the disgraceful decision by Charlie Flanagan to try and commemorate the RIC last month, back in December, I think it was, and that just turned, the whole culture in many parts of Ireland against them. It demonstrated an arrogance. But to go back to your original point, we don't expect to hear these songs. We also know that even songs like Paul McCartney Give Irish Back to the Irish, it was banned back in the day by the British, and we never got to hear it unless you'd heard it on a pirate radio. I'm not surprised that we don't get to hear the Hates Black songs. I mean, Bobby Sands is mentioned in RTE, but more often than not, in terms of historical relevance, he's not discussed in terms of reverence or anything like that. And it's simply, I think we, the Blanket Men, were an embarrassment to the political establishment in the South here. So we don't expect those sort of things. But look, the guy that wrote it and sang it, Francie Brolly, well, he stayed with Sinn Féin and then he folded his tent and left them, I think, in relation to their stance on abortion. I had obviously disagreements with Francie because of how long he held on, but that's all the secondary to the fact that he put in a long shift Transbeth at the Republican Helm. He's immortalized the Hits Black Men through that song. And I mean, the deepest sympathy to his loved ones and his family and his wider circle of friends. I met him at John Kelly's funeral back in 2007 in South Derry. It was the only time I actually met Francie, and we just shook hands and spoke. He's a very civil man. It's sad that he's passed.
Well, Anthony, before we talk about the political earthquake that's currently ongoing in the 26 counties, I want to talk about some of the politics that's going on in the North. If you go to Facebook and Twitter, you'll see that during the week that Sinn Féin has fully endorsed the PSNI, asking because there's not enough Catholics on the force. They had a big ad campaign or whatever that to join up with the PSNI. And that leads into the treaty that was signed by Gerry Adams and Martin McGuinness in 1998. That they got a special carve out, which a lot of people said they didn't know about. They were called on the runs, or OTRs, where letters, I think, from the Queen of England stating that they would not be prosecuted for whatever they did within the IRA. And that seems to be torn up this week, where the PSNI have just said they've done investigations because they're treating the Troubles as a 30-year crime wave, not as a revolution or an uprising, and that they're going to go after these former IRA members who were probably in their 60s and 70s. How far back are they going to go to start arresting people throughout the six counties?
Well, they'll go right back as far as they can. I mean, the person in charge of it, Bobby Singleton, was laughed out of court a number of months ago after he tried to take a case against IRSP members. The judge threw it out. I mean, it seemed to be very much a very partisan approach. He'd be widely regarded as a bigot, totally opposed to any form of republicanism. It's interesting that he's gone after former IRA activists, yet we have what the BBC described as murder on an industrial scale, and he's not. He didn't mention going after the cops who have been involved in this. He didn't mention going after the British soldiers who have been involved in it. So it's an attempt, and I think to some extent that it's an attempt by Singleton to try and justify the terrible waste of public money that has gone into legacy issues with very little coming forward as a result. I wouldn't expect to see a great deal emerging from this either. I do think that they're firing a shot across Sinn Féin's bows. They've certainly rubbed Gerry Kelly's nose in it. Because Gerry Kelly was a senior IRA figure who had sent people out on, given the position of seniority of command, had sent people out on IRA activity, and now he's recruiting for a police force that is determined to put the people that he sent out into prison. And we have already seen that John Downey was extradited from the south up to the north. So Gerry Kelly and Michelle O'Neill were up recruiting for the people who have extradited John Downey to the north and are trying to imprison him for conflict-related activity going back to 1972. So that gives you an indication of how far they will go back. Sinn Féin promised to put manners in the police. They didn't put manners in the police. The police put manners in Sinn Féin. And we're seeing the result of it today.
And what is your status, Anthony? I mean, we've had you on throughout the years with the Boston tapes where you did interviews where they weren't to be released by Boston College of people that were involved with the 30 years of the Troubles. And then they were released. Boston College released them. And you're living in the 26 counties now. Could you be extradited back based on the interviews and your own interview within the Boston tapes?
The PSNI are pretending that they were carrying out an investigation. But yes, they could. There is a possibility that they could be extradited back to the British. It would be interesting if Sinn Féin were in government and they would be extraditing Republicans, part of a government that's extraditing Republicans to the British in the north. I mean, people who were in protest with Bobby Sands. Look, it's all up in the air. Sinn Féin are not the party that we knew many years ago. They don't stand for the same things. They're a very popular party as a result of the election show, but they They no longer stand for the type of things that we stood together for, that ethos of resistance, challenging British authority, challenging the Consent Principle. Sinn Féin have become the type of party that Fianna Fáil were, and will have the same approach as Fianna Fáil had, but it's just that many Republicans have always been unhappy with it, but they have to get realistic and see that they're living in a new, they're living in new times. Our campaign, of course, and the Unionists and the United Ireland, of course, and the British out of the North failed completely, and this is what we're left with today.
Well, Anthony, now we'll go down to the earthquake that's happening in the 26 counties. A lot of this, from my remembering, started when Danny Morrison got up at an Ardèche down in Dublin and said that they'll take control of the 26 county with a ballot box in one hand and an Armalite in the other. Well, the Armalite has since been handed over to the British, and they are using the ballot box in 1986 to get rid of abstentionism when then Rory O'Brady and Joe O'Neill and Dahi O'Connell walked out of the Ardèche and formed Republican Sinn Féin. But they've been on a long, steady road to get into power in Dublin, and I've been listening to RT since 5 o'clock this morning, and it is the people that are in the state of shock are the people on RTE. For them describing the results that are coming in right now throughout the country, and they're saying had Sinn Féin ran more candidates, they would be the largest party in the 26 counties right now.
Well, there's no doubt that Sinn Féin made a serious mistake here, but you can't fault them for it.
No.
Because Sinn Féin were not to know after their last electoral disaster, Sinn Féin were not to know that the public mood was going to give them the lift that it did. So I think we're Sinn Féin, as much as anybody else, are surprised. Many other people are not delighted, although Sinn Féin are obviously delighted. It's a major, major vote for them. It's a major endorsement of the oppositional sounds that they have been making to what has gone on. They have some very capable people like Owen O'Brien, who many people reckon would be a brilliant housing minister, compared to what, and certainly compared to what we had in the past. Owen Murphy. And being Pierce Dougherty, very, very clever on economics, makes an appeal to people, people have a sense that he knows what he's talking about, unlike when Gerry Adams was trying to wax economic against Michael McDowell and effectively get demolished in the discussion. That never happens to Pierce Dougherty. So, I mean, they've got a massive lift, Sinn Féin, and I suppose I've noticed a lot of Republicans who are unhappy with the party and have been opposed them for years, particularly in the North, have been gloomy about the outcome. But other Republicans who have lived down here, who have been about, I can't take a difference. I spoke to people who were at one time linked to the dissident groups, and they have been saying for years that they would vote Sinn Féin if they get rid of Adams and his Northern Cabal, because they were never trusted. But the policies that Sinn Féin are articulating today do appeal to a wide spectrum of opinion, including many of those who were critical of Sinn Féin. I didn't vote them. I don't trust them. I see it all. I see the three big parties as Tweedledee, Tweedledum, and Tweedledaw. I don't really see Sinn Féin making a lot of difference. I mean, Owen O'Brien, if he was housing minister, would have no doubt a definite commitment to changing things. But what happens when you go into government? You end up getting destroyed by the restrictions of government. I don't think if Sinn Féin do go into government, they will find it easy to make any change. I still expect my pension to come, not at 65, but I mean, well into my 60s, regardless of who is in Dublin. I don't expect to be any richer or any poorer off that. I think it'll be as poor no matter who's in government. I don't think I have a chance, or my daughter has a chance, of getting a home or a start, regardless of who is in government. So to me, it's pretty much a question of changing the the chairs on the Titanic, and no real structural change. But it's the nature of society in which we live. It's the nature of Western society. There is no revolutionary force. I give my vote to people before profit, not because I am a great fan of people before profit, but I do feel that at least they make the best critique of the establishment. People like Richard Boyd Barrett make a very strong critique that I can identify with. Would it be realistic when they get into government? That's another matter. The left continuously let it down. And if anything, I mean, the best emotion that I would have as a result of today's election was when I heard that Joan Burton was going to lose her seat, because the Labour Party have been disgraceful, and she was at the head of it, and they have been disgraceful every time they get into government. They're quite happy to behave as a condom for Fine Gael, while Fine Gael's shopping and screwing the poorest people in this society, and the Labour Party have always happily given them the protection that they wish for. And they've never went into that government and done what they said they were going to do. And I even seen Howlin today, their Labour Party leader, contemplating getting himself back into government, getting his tiny little ass on the ministerial seat. To me, it's a disgrace. So, I mean, that's my view to election. I take a view, pretty they all couldn't lose, much as Henry Kissinger said about the Iran-Iraq war.
You're listening to WBAI, and it is now 5:24 over in Dublin. And what are the latest results right now? I mean, I haven't listened to RT now in a couple of hours, but on the way down to the station in Brooklyn, I mean, just Sinn Féin was just sweeping everywhere. They were topping the poll, and they said something they'd never done before. How are we going to divide up Sinn Féin's excess votes to the other candidates, which that never happened because they didn't top the poll in order to divide up the votes?
That's true. I mean, we don't know what way the second preferences will go. I mean, first indications are that they're very promiscuous and who the second preferences are going to. One would have expected that they would go to the left, but that hasn't always been the case. I've listened today to Fine Gaelers saying that they were getting a substantial amount of Sinn Féin votes, and also passed on to from Sinn Féin to Fianna Fáil. So, and I've heard people saying that they voted Fine Gael number one and Sinn Féin number two. This is anecdotal, and we never effectively know until the end of the election. But the Sinn Féin, certainly the public in the south of Ireland have stated very clearly that Sinn Féin are to be represented in government. Now, the other two main parties have hitched themselves to their own wagon, and that wagon, in a sense, are hoisting their own petard, because the wagon that they've hitched themselves to is very much one where they have painted on the side of it, no government over Sinn Féin. And to me, it's a height of arrogance. I'm not a Sinn Féin supporter by any stretch of the imagination, but it's a height of arrogance for these two parties to sit and say and treat with contempt the demand from the voting public for change. And they're not voting for revolution. They're simply voting for the participation by Sinn Féin in government. And if these, I think of the two parties to say not to go into government with Sinn Féin, the only way they'll have a workable, sustainable government for one term will be for the two of them to align, and that would make Sinn Féin the opposition almost certainly guaranteed to become the government next time round. If Sinn Féin go in, we are the two parties, Fine Gael or Fianna Fáil, the hope will be in the leadership of those parties that Sinn Féin will end up as Labour have ended up. Sinn Féin may just be too shrewd for that. As they go in and see things going badly, they may pull the plug and hope for a fresh election, on which they will be rewarded for pulling the plug on an austere government. So, I mean, in all things, it does look up for Sinn Féin. Now, again, you need to see a pattern over elections, and Sinn Féin have gone up and down. Too early to say, but if I was in Sinn Féin, I would be pretty happy and confident about the future, because this society has given the two Tweedledee and Tweedledum a serious slap. That they have voted for Tweedledaw is secondary to the fact that they have given the establishment a serious slap. Although, when we talk about the establishment, Jerry Adams did say, when during the debate with Rory Quinn, who was in Labour Party, that Sinn Féin was an establishment party. I think he's very much right. There's a lot of people in Sinn Féin who are not anti-establishment, are not establishment, they're very much anti-establishment. But as we have seen over the years, the leadership of a great way of defanging the radicalism within Sinn Féin and bringing it on board for much less radical projects. We have seen in the north how they colluded with the DUP to push the pension age up to 66, how they've been responsible for introducing measures that have really punished the disadvantaged in the north. So it's by no means guaranteed that we're going to see, and I doubt very much that we'll see any real radical change, certainly no structural change, as a result of Sinn Féin participating in government. But the arrogance of the parties annoys me, that we that Sinn Féin has been told that its vote doesn't count. I mean, the government parties, and you have to include Fianna Fáil in this, because they give support to the government in the conference and supply business. We have to regard them as in the same light as the DUP when the DUP were refusing to talk to Sinn Féin. People represent Sinn Féin and not the vote. So those people have to be respected. As some famous writer once wrote very famously, the people have voted the bastards. Well, they've voted, and that will be respected. We may not like it, but it has to be respected.
Anthony, Maliki McCourtia, great to hear
Maliki.
You. Grand to talk to you. In the overall situation of the world, as somebody said, the government always gets in, the government, and it just covers every bloody thing. But it seems to me that when the rebels and the revolutionaries and the upstarts get the power, all morality and principle goes out the window and prosperity and money take over. So what if that border remains there is a talk about that the minority, as they are right now, are going to have more sex and more children, so there'll be more Catholics than Protestants. What happens even if the border, will the border go? And that, to me, until that goes, then there's going to be fierce disagreement on where people stand, whether it's Fianna Fáil used to be revolutionary and Republican, Fine Gael was tendence towards, all revolutionaries become right wing when they get in. Isn't that correct?
It's from my experience of the world. I don't trust revolutionaries. I'm not a revolutionary. I don't believe that change comes, good change, lasting change comes about through revolution. I used to believe it, but my experience has been that revolutionaries, as Orwell said, 9 times out of 10, they're social climbers with bombs. I think that's very much the case in Sinn Féin now. Sinn Féin, many people in Sinn Féin have never been associated with a bomb, particularly in the south of Ireland. But that clique of Adams and Gerry Kelly, I mean, seriously, Gerry Kelly looks as radical as Ian Paisley Jr. All right, Kelly's less corrupt. Like, in fact, Kelly's not corrupt, but he's as radical as Ian Paisley Jr. There's no radicalism about Gerry Kelly. And there will not be a united Ireland as a result of Sinn Féin getting a big vote down here. That is going to be determined by the people in the north.
Yeah.
And one of the strange things about Sinn Féin getting voted in down here is that the people in the north, the unionists certainly, are going to be much more frightened and hostile towards the idea of a united Ireland. You can see how much, although they cooperate together in the north and the face of it, how much they actually hate each other. So the unionist population in the north are going to be hopelessly opposed to any sort of realignment within the country.
Is there no way
of... Would you get enough nationalists in the north to vote? I don't believe you will. I still have a view that the majority of people in the north will hold on to Nurse for fear of something worse, and they'd stick with London rather than go to Dublin.
Isn't it a fact, though, that Sinn Féin ostensibly is supposedly democratic, non-sectarian, and democratic. And that wouldn't it be a good thing for them to reassure the people who are of a different religion that they're not going to be persecuted or thrown out or discriminated against? Is there any way of doing that?
No, I don't believe there is, because it's not Sinn Féin's fault. Sinn Féin didn't create the sectarianism in the North, and Sinn Féin, the sense of the product of the sectarianism. There's just a sectarian, structural sectarian chasm in the North,
yes,
that is not going to be overcome by goodwill on the part of Sinn Féin. It's going to take it'll be a generational change over a long, long period. And I think this is what Seamus Mullen was trying to do. As much as he disagreed with Seamus Mullen, trying to suggest what he did in his otherwise very good book, he written just before he died. Seamus Mullen had argued that what you need to do is change the goalposts in the North so that rather than have 50% plus one of a majority to go in to reunify the country and have Britain leave, you should increase it to 60. Now it would be a complete violation of the Good Friday Agreement.
Yeah.
And Judge Humphreys in his book, Richard Humphreys in his book Beyond the Border, has written an excellent, highly recommended work on what the Good Friday Agreement actually means. And he has dealt with this question. He's dealt with it efficiently and comprehensively. But Seamus Mullen, I believe, was trying to take the sting out of the eventual move towards United Ireland from the perspective of the unionists. Because the animosity, it's so intense. There's been no bridging of the gap in the North. It's a state deeply enshrined in a sectarian society. It has never transcended sectarianism. It's institutionalized it in the structures up there. And for the foreseeable future, I don't see any change in that mindset in the North. And I don't think there's anything that Sinn Féin can do, even if Sinn Féin rolled over, lay on the ground, give the unionists cuddles, it wouldn't change a thing. And
well, do you think,
Derek Kelly's got a deferential attitude to the British police, who are still involved in covering up the past, is not going to change anything other. The unionists are not going to view it as a move, as a conciliatory move.
Do you think one of the things that frightens those who don't do, as I was trying to recall the little translation of Sinn Féin, is it not ourselves alone?
Well, it is ourselves alone. And Sinn Féin are seen by many as been a very, a career structure. They're not viewed as a generous party. In fact, they have a reputation for bullying. Now, hopefully, we can see that move.
And punishing,
they
punish
of
people.
In the North sort of make diminish as a result of the growth in the South.
Yeah.
And we may see the culture of bullying moving. Yeah. But that sends out vibes to people that the Sinn Féin image have been waspish, nasty, pugnacious. it alienates. Certainly the unionists, even when it doesn't alienate them as such, it certainly gives them an excuse for not wanting to reconcile.
Right.
The fact is that the unionists have the sway on the border, and the border is not going to change. The constitutional status of the North is not going to change until such times as the majority of people in the North that change to come about, and then that'll have to be tied into a referendum in the South, where the referendum will, if the referendum approves it, there are arguments about any such referendum in the South that it wouldn't because of the cost. Sinn Féin vote, I'm not sure, it's not even far from convinced it's anything to do with United Ireland. It's to do with the homeless crisis, it's to do with the health crisis, it's to do with the arrogance of a government that was quite prepared to let the reward the bankers, plenty of money to pay back and bail out the banks, no money to bail out the homeless. And when they were offered $15 billion, when Apple were required to pay back, I think it was something like $15 billion, they found every excuse for refusing to take it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the government of free marketeers and does not have the slightest inkling of being a strategic social state. Has no idea whatsoever. It's all about the market.
So what if the people who want independence from the crown and don't necessarily want adhering to become a republic, part of the republic, could they possibly in the six counties declare themselves a separate country?
Well, it's certainly not part of the Good Friday Agreement.
Yeah.
There doesn't seem to be a great appetite for it. It might mushroom if we're beginning to think that there was going to be a referendum that would lead to United Ireland. I think then that they would probably go for repartition, which again isn't part of the Good Friday Agreement.
Yeah.
They would push for some sort of repartition and hold on to what little they have. Look, unionism has lasted quite a long time. The North has lasted quite a long time. Charlie Hockey once says that the North was a failed political entity. Mm. But we have found to maybe our dismay that the strategy that we had and that we pursued for years, unity by coercion, is actually the republicanism that was embodied in that concept is the failed political entity.
Yeah.
And I don't see the North continuing forever, but it'll certainly not, I'll not see it united in my lifetime. With the South, nobody who actually fought in the ranks of the Provisional IRA will ever live to see United Ireland. I mean, Sinn Féin tell us today that they're still fighting for United Ireland. We've been fighting for United Ireland for the last 50 years,
yeah,
since the start of the IRA campaign. We're no closer to it.
You're listening to WBAI, and we have Anthony McIntyre on, giving us an analysis of the election that's currently going on. Anthony himself did almost 18 years in Longkesh. He's now living south of the border. And if you want to hear this type of analysis and the value of Radio Free Erin, because even right now, Ricky O'Rourke, we had on a couple of weeks ago, he has a play that's in Belfast called In the Name of the Sun about Jerry Conlon, who was a frequent guest here at WBAI. One of the characters is Sandy Boyer. One of the people that was on Radio Free Erin. And if you want to keep hearing these type of voices of Ricky O'Rourke and when Jerry Conlon was alive and Anthony McIntyre, who's mixed up in America to the extent of the Boston tapes of interviews that he did with former IRA men that were sent to Boston College to be held there and not to be released until they died.
Confidential.
Yeah, confidential.
Until everybody died.
The number here, if you want to keep hearing this type of program, is 516-620-3602. 516-620-3602. We've gotten some BAI buddies. We'd like you to call and be a BAI buddy. And this way you donate 10 to 15 a month. We'd like to thank Lawrence and then Lockridge from Manhattan. They have become WBAIs for Radio Free Erin. Oh, well, I'm going to make it two. It sounds better. Sounds like we're raising more money. Come on.
And he is...
If you put any more, I would have just kept going and going.
He's one of my first Friday luncheon mates.
Oh, this?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, here we go. Good.
Thank you, Larry.
Yeah. And Anthony, I mean, we've had you on over the years. I don't know if you get that much airtime on RTE or different venues. I know you have a great website called The Pensive Quill. And if anybody wants to see, like, dissonant views, you might not like what he has up there, but he's giving other people that he might not even like, a platform to put up their views.
And it's called, some people like it as well.
Yeah, well, that's why it's a popular website. It's called The Pensive Quill. But we've had you on BAI now, I don't know, 10, 20 years now, where, since the 90s, at least, anyway.
And there was, yep, Mike Quill.
Yeah.
Well, you very much had. You had us on when we were rolling the blanket, and now we're on The Pensive Quill. The Pensive Quill allows, it's basically a free speech website. It tries to promote freedom of opinion, so it has a wide range of views, and many of those views I do not like, but it's open to everybody who wants to write something. We get a good readership, and we get good assistance from people who support it. Well, it's the editorial policy is to promote as much discussion, freedom of information, enhance public understanding, and it's while Republicans run it, it's very much a promiscuous website in terms of it, and it's intellectually promiscuous. It flirts with a wide range of ideas. We have, for example, the Monday columnist who has the regular slot tied down is John Coulter, and John Coulter is a unionist and evangelical Christian. All the sort of things that I most definitely am not, but being John goes out there and makes his case every Monday, and people are welcome to read them.
If you want to hear this type of voice, please call now. We only have about 5 or 10 more minutes. 516-620-3602. We don't get a couple of more BAI buddies. We might be preempted next week to bring you in a program that can take in money, because we're in fundraising drive for the month of February. So please, at this time, call in at 516-620-3602 and make any type of donation. It'll come under the guise of Radio Free Aaron. Anthony, one thing I can tell you now, before the votes are counted, before whoever gets into government, the money that Sinn Féin will raise in this country will be unbelievable, because I already know Neil or Lord O'Dowd, who runs Irish Central and the Irish Voice, I can only imagine the headlines he's going to be running when they're coming over for their big dinner dance at the Sheraton. That'll be sold out way ahead of time. The doors that will be open now to Sinn Féin, not that they were closed, but they'll be wide open right now based on this election result.
Well, look, if Sinn Féin were a serious left-wing party, those doors would not be open.
Well, that is true. I mean, they get greeted by Peter King and everybody else that's whoever's in the White House. But I just know the reaction to this and the way – well, there's only one way you can spin it, is they had an unbelievable election, even beyond their wildest imagination.
They had a great election, and well beyond their wildest imagination, as I said earlier. Their mistake, for what they can't be faulted, is not putting out more candidates, because they could have swept the board everywhere they've appeared. They have tapped into the resentment at what is going on in this society, where the rich are continuously rewarded by a government of the rich, supported by an opposition of the rich, and people are simply fed up with it. It's across, I know they're talking about it being a youth quake. It's not. It's across all the age categories. There's people of my age are getting very concerned about their pensions. Now, I say to them, well, Sinn Féin put their pension up to 66 in the north. They're not going to do anything about it here. But sometimes it's just good to be able to vote the government out. And I think it's always important to be able to have elections for voting the governments in. But as Tony Benn once said, the most important thing to be able to do with your vote is to vote them out.
And you're listening to Radio Free Aaron. Anthony, we're going to let you drop off now, because we're going to do a little bit of pitching. And
okay, John. Okay.
But, Anthony, thank you very much. Great to talk to you. Thank you.
Thank you very much, John. Thank you very much, Mr. McCourt. All the best.
Yeah, and that was Anthony McIntyre, who has many long years that he spent in Loncash. And then when he got out, he fell out with Sinn Féin, and they did protest around his house up in Belfast. So for the safety of his family, he moved to the south, which on another front was good because of what's going on with the Boston tapes, that he could be extradited back to stand trial based on an interview with himself. So that and we'll be always covering that with Anthony McIntyre. So, Malachy, just before we go off, we do a couple of more announcements we made in the first hour. I know you'll be teaching a course at Hunter College, and who would have thought, who would have thunk that you would be teaching a memoir class, a memoir?
Well, following in the footsteps of my brother Frank, who never went to high school. He was the only high school teacher in New York that did not have a high school diploma, I think, and neither do I. So that's February 22nd is a Saturday from 1 to 5, 212-772-4067. If you have aspirations towards writing your memoir, come for a 4-hour crash course in memoir writing. and I will help you get on with it. Because all you don't write your memoir. It's all in your head. You write, as Bob Dylan said, he doesn't write songs. I write them down, and I will help you write your memoir down.
And also, my play, One Man Play About Driving a Yellow Cab here in New York City for the last 40 years is coming to Queens, my home borough, at the New York Irish Center in Long Island City. Already did sold out performances in the Bronx and the Irish Repertory Theater and right downstairs here at the Brooklyn Commons. So I'm going to be there Saturday, April 18th, Sunday, April 19th, and the tickets are going fast. You can get more information, and if you're booking your ticket to Dublin or Donegal, I'll be over there. Go to offthemeter.net. That's one word, offthemeter.net, and you'll see the links to buy the tickets for the shows. Malachi, we got six more minutes to push the station here and, right, and to ask people. If you want to hear this type of programming, we had Corey Galgannon on the first hour. We had Anthony McIntyre on giving what's going on literally as we speak. They're counting the votes. They're divvying up the votes here. And Sinn Féin is sweeping the board. And
could I say, John, that more specifically, if you want to hear us.
Well, yeah.
On Sundays.
Listen, I enjoy sitting here at your, like I tell you, when you're not here, I have to book a lot more guests. I can't carry it for 2 hours. When you're
here, I leave.
I go to the bathroom. I get you tea downstairs. When you don't hear me, I'm out running errands. I'm putting money in meters. I'm doing everything. Malachi goes, I just sit down and I go, is that right?
Yeah. 40 years, John, you have been here, and you've done very well indeed for WBAI. And it's if you become a WBAI buddy, donate $10 a month for 12 months. It's $120. And you can take it off your taxes and just say it's Radio Free Aaron, John McDonough, Corey Kilgannon, Malachi McCourt, and WBAI. It's very simple. And please, if we will be, I mean, there's no doubt about it, we do depend on you. We will be preempted if we don't, if you don't respond. So it's,
well, the station has to make money during the month of February to pay the bills.
Yeah.
They can't have us on waxing away and then there's no money coming in. And it's just that's just the way life is. And if people can give in more money, then they say, you know what? Those guys raise money and they can keep doing what they're doing during the fund drive. But the number here is 516-620-3602. But listen, if you're making a donation, say, of $100 or $110, to become a BAI buddy instead. This way, you're covered for the year, and the station will know that every month that $10 or $15 will be coming out, and they can plan their budget and pay for the antenna and pay for the rent here and all the other expenses of salaries, which is at a bare minimum. I mean, a pirate radio station couldn't run more efficiently than here and paying bills.
And thank you, Larry Lockridge, for your contribution.
That's it. But you couldn't stretch it out. There was a Lawrence, and then there was a Lockridge, and then there was an S. His middle initial is S. Like I said, they all donated there. Yes.
Well, Larry, thank you very much. So we do need. So that's we need five people.
We need even more or whatever. Just as many as possible.
That's the basis. Yeah. If you want to hear us again next week, please get on the phone, and it's 516-620-3602. That is. Do you have your pen handy? Very slowly now. You know, 516, Sweet 16, right? 620-3602. It's very, very simple. And if you contribute, donate, or pledge, and do honor your pledge. It's you don't pay pledges, you honor pledges. And we have the most honorable people in the whole world. So please do that at 516-620-3602. John McDonough is here. Maliki McCourt is here. Corey Kilgannon was here.
He's out in the street getting those stories that gets into the New York Times. And like, you know what? He was even complaining, Corey, about how you could have a great story and if it's New York based, but if Trump is doing something, it overwhelms everything.
Yeah.
And even Maliki, the thing with Nancy Pelosi, which Trump drags everybody into the gutter. Like him starting off not doing the handshake. She gets pissed off, and now I'm going to rip off. In normal circumstances, Nancy Pelosi is not going to do that.
Yeah.
But he drags you into the gutter. He drags everyone down with it, and he loves it. Because that's where he wallows in. And he will not come up to your level. But he does bring everybody down to his level. And that's been a problem. And the Democrats do not know how to deal with it. Because he's dragging them all down into their level. Never mind that they can't count votes out in Iowa. I mean, that there's another problem.
One nice thing about him, John, is that he doesn't bother his wife with sex.
Mm-hmm.
He pays other women for it, and that's very kind of him that he doesn't.
Yeah, but that hasn't hurt him either. You would think all of these things that are coming up about
him. Well, it should. You know, he's keeping people employed in his bed, you know.
That's some employment, huh? All right, we're going to come up now. The song in the background is the H-Block song by Francie Brolly. We're replaying part of it anyway. Francie died during the week, a lifelong Irish Republican. And, you know, it was just one of those songs. It was a national anthem at the late 70s and early 80s when people were on the blanket in the H-Blocks of Long Cash and then dying on hunger strike. That any Republican functioned from Gaelic Park out to the Tower View on Roosevelt Avenue in Woodside, where all the fundraising for Clannagh and Irish Northern Aid were going on. So I'll give the number one more time, 516-620-3602. Anything counts. Hope to see you next week.
Was Berlitan, my country's wrongs were told again by tens of thousands marching men, and my heart stirred to the cause. So I'll wear no convict uniform, nor meekly serve my time. That Britain might brand Ireland's fight, be it 100 years of crime. I learned of centuries of strife, of cruel laws, injustice rife. I saw now in my own young life the fruits of foreign sway. Protesters threatened, tortured, maimed, division nurtured, passions flamed, outrage provoked, rights cause defamed. This is the conqueror's way. I'll wear no
A lot of folks like to bash the mainstream media. Those same voices rarely offer an alternative. Lucky for you, you found the alternative already. You're tuned to it right now. Hi, my name is Reggie Johnson, and I'm the host of From the Soundboard. WBAI is a listener-supported commercial-free radio station that loves to challenge the norms and defy them. But in order to keep providing you with groundbreaking conversations and unique arts content you rely on, we need your help. Donate by visiting give2wbai.org or pledge right from your smartphone by texting the letters WBAI to 41444, and thank you for your support.
Are you up early? Well, Tuesday through Thursday, you can tune into WBAI's morning show, Good Morning Nueva York, with King Downing, 6 to 7 a.m., to hear poet-playwright Marvin X.
Harlem Hotel ain't Harlem. White music blasting, no jazz, black classical Duke.
Basie, Ella, Billy, White Music Hotel. White man in elevator say, where you going? He want to push my button. No, where you going, white man? That's the question. Push your button.
Marvin X, mover and shaker in the 60s Black Arts Movement. Tuesday through Thursday with King Downing on Good Morning Nueva York, right here on WBAI New York.
Hello there, my faithful WBAI listeners. This is Hazel Pinder, a member of WBAI's local station board, and I have some information to share with you. The next meeting of the local station board is on Wednesday, February 12th at 7 p.m. The location is at the YWCA at 33rd Avenue, Brooklyn, New York, between Atlantic Avenue and State Street. At the last WBAI local station board meeting, a resolution was adopted which condemned proposed changes to the Pacific Foundation's bylaws. These changes in the bylaws were an attempt at an anti-democratic restructuring of Pacifica, which would eliminate local broadcasting like over WBAI. We on the local station board voted unanimously against adopting the proposed bylaw amendments. Meetings of the local station board are open to the public, and as always, there will be an opportunity for public comment. The meeting is wheelchair accessible. Join us. Again, that's Wednesday, February 12th at 7 p.m. at the YWCA, 33rd Avenue, Brooklyn, New York. Listeners and the public are invited and welcome. It's your radio station. Please come out and voice your opinion.